This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, How Do We Know? You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Western science has traditionally dismissed indigenous knowledge, but now researchers are taking a closer look at what they can learn from traditional practices that farmers and healers have used for centuries. Alan Yu has more, and he starts us off at a small farm in Philadelphia.
Farmer Chris Bolden Newsom is staring at sweet potato shoots in a greenhouse. He puts them in soil and mixes the soil with compost.
I'm going to pray over them, and I'm going to wait until the sweet potatoes start sprouting little slips that I can take off and put in the ground in the summer.
He closes his eyes, bows his head, puts his hands together, and speaks softly.
All the relationships you need in the earth, and bless us, healing our relationships. And so they're going to wait for like...
Chris says taking a moment to pray is an acknowledgement of God's work.
It's what I learned to do. It's what my parents taught me, and it's what their parents taught them. So yeah, absolutely. We would not put anything in the ground without prayer here.
Chris is the co-director of the Sankofa Community Farm in Philadelphia. He comes from a long line of African-American farmers. On this farm, they use traditional farming techniques. No tractors, no chemical fertilizers.
My daddy was soaking seeds in his mouth before he planted his okra. He put the seeds in his mouth. And I don't know why he did it. And he would do that as he was going down the row. And then he would plant those seeds, you know, like that. So I just put the seeds in my mouth. I learned later that this is an ancient practice in lots of parts of the world, you know?
People soak seeds in water, and now I'm wondering if there's something in saliva that does the job better. Chris is preparing the field for a new growing season. He picks up a hoe and scrapes the top off the soil. He doesn't dig in deep or turn over the soil completely. That's what conventional farmers might do. Chris also leaves bits of leftover plants from last year's crop, along with the roots of weeds.
These plants are in the ground still. This is old. This was cabbage or something.
He says it's all a part of the soil now and shouldn't be disturbed.
This is controversial. Organic American farming even would cringe at this.
Chris farms this way to uphold tradition, praying to plants, soaking seeds in your mouth, leaving in bits of last year's crop. All this might sound unscientific. But Chris doesn't worry if it translates to science.
It doesn't matter so much, not to me. I'd be much more comfortable with science trying to come and learn what we're doing.
Certainly, science has confirmed what we've always known.
That's Leah Penniman. She is a farmer and activist at Soulfire Farm in New York State.
I mean, I'm also a scientist. My undergrad is in environmental biology, and I teach high school student science. So I love science and don't see it as incongruous with other ways of knowing.
She says take the plant sorrel, for instance. There's emerging evidence it could lower blood pressure. Maybe one day it could be used to treat hypertension.
You can analyze sorrel and find out that it has malic acid and tartaric acid and hydrocitric acid lactone. So it has all of these active compounds that lend to the medicinal properties that we speak of. And it's really just two complementary ways of knowing.
As Leah leads me around and gives me a tour, she shows me all the details of the farm that are designed after indigenous farming practices, down to how they raise their chickens.
We practice something called rotational grazing, which was recorded in pre-colonial times in Guinea and other parts of Africa.
After the chickens, we went to see the fields.
You may notice that all of our crops are grown in these long rectangular mounds called raised beds. And this is also an African indigenous tradition that comes from the Ovambo people in Namibia and Angola.
And after the crops, we went to see the fruit trees.
So we are looking at what appears to be a staircase built into the side of the earth. These are terraces, or in Kenya, they're called fenyaju. Fenyaju means throw it upwards.
This is how you can create bits of flat land for farming on slopes, like you have in Kenya and here on Leah's farm. You dig up soil at the bottom, throw it up the slope, smooth out the mound to make a flat surface, and reinforce the edge with logs and sticks. Leah also uses the African practice of polyculture. She plants apple trees, and next to those, she plants sage, chives, and other herbs because those keep pests away. Ultimately, Leah says she does it because it works. It works so well that many sustainable and natural farmers have adopted these practices as part of what's called permaculture.
It's a whole collection, a compendium of indigenous practices that were rebranded and now make a profit for mostly white college-educated men.
Scientists are also interested in learning more about these practices to see how indigenous knowledge translates to the lab. I got in touch with Nokwanda Makunga. She is a plant and molecular biologist at Stellenbosch University in South Africa. She says science can work with African healers and herbal medicine.
Some people associate the use with witchcraft, so there are all kinds of negative connotations that are aligned to the use of traditional medicines in Africa.
Nokwanda studies the plants that traditional healers use. That kind of medicine used to be outlawed in South Africa during apartheid.
It was one way of actually oppressing the people, was taking away this link to traditional medicines, which in essence also has a spiritual and religious connotation attached to it. And this caused a lack of interest from the scientific community. And during the apartheid era, there was no investment to actually study traditional medicines.
She says that's got a lot to do with who was using them.
You will find that it is mainly people of color, black people, Indian people, and a community of people which are classified as colored in South Africa. Post-apartheid, things really changed. The South African government realized the value of traditional medicines and indigenous knowledge as a whole. You find that acceptance, I think, is actually growing as we discover new chemicals, new chemical entities that have pharmaceutical importance.
Nokwanda says people might change their minds once they realize just how much of Western medicine comes from our knowledge of plants. There's Taxol. It comes from the Pacific yew tree, and now it's used to treat cancer. And of course, there's opium, which led to morphine. Nokwanda says maybe we don't think about it explicitly, but lots of us rely on traditional remedies. She says it's called medical pluralism.
When we are sick, we go for a home remedy. Say if you've got a cold, this might involve lemon, garlic, and household things that are actually available in our homes, or a therapy which your grandmother might have passed on to you.
But there's a reason why most doctors don't prescribe powdered tree bark as medicine. And that's where scientists like Nokwanda come in. They can study a plant, find out what chemical makes it useful, and figure out what the right dose is to make it most effective. Nokwanda travels to rural areas to talk to traditional healers.
People are often excited because they know that they hold something of value, but they just don't know who they can share this information with, who might be able to discover this value from a scientific point of view.
And now, scientists like her are listening.
Alan Yu reported this story.